You are listening to TRC Unleashed.
Here comes Ace Sanders, third in the country in punt returns. Matt Wild to punt out of his own end zone. Standing in the south end zone. Puts his foot into it. Spiraling kick. Going to turn over. Ace looking into the sun. Backing up to the 37. Ace near sideline. 40, 45, 50. Space at 40. One move, 30. Ace going for it, 20. Ace Sanders, are you kidding me? Touchdown, Carolina. Touchdown, Ace Sanders. Why do they punt to him? Oh, why do they punt? Wolverines break the huddle. After their controversial first down, high formation with Gardner at quarterback. Smith, the tailback. Pressure! Penny just dives in! Hits the defender, the ball's on the ground! The Gamecocks have it! The Gamecocks have it! The Gamecocks take it over! Clowney just burst through, ripped the helmet off the tailback, and took it away! He took it away!
That's a nice little statement for the Heisman right there, folks. Wow!
Don't do us like that! Don't do us!
The wind seems to be okay. Just got to get it up. He's had one block and missed one today. So
what about a quarterback draw here? Thompson. Out of the shotgun, throws down, middle of the field, end zone, caught,
touchdown,
Bruce Ellington, Dylan Thompson comes off the bench with 11 seconds to go, and gets six, and the Gamecocks are up on the Wolverines, 33-28 from 32 yards out, oh my, hurt me.
Hello, Gamecock Nation. That was our good friend Todd Ellis and the Asteroids Galaxy Tour opening the show for us. Welcome to the year 2013, and welcome to TRC Unleashed. This is episode number 40. I am Buck, and I am your host and the CEO of TRC, and I'm joined in this new year by TRC President T-Bone and our trusty administrative assistant, the G-Man. Guys, welcome to the show. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
I'm not sure how to react to the administrative assistant tag, but happy New Year to you as well.
Hey, it's a promotion. You should be
seriously.
Okay. I guess I should take it that way. Okay.
As long as your wife can take over the janitorial duties, you get to be the administrative assistant. So anyway, moving
on. That's very sexist, by the way. I'll let it go.
But, you don't, what do you
I
mean?
I just had to get that shot in.
You don't see many. You don't see many woman janitors. How deep am I digging the hole? Anyway, so we started off the new year in spectacular fashion yesterday with a thrilling 33-28 victory over the Michigan Wolverines in the Outback Bowl. And guys, that was about as exciting a game as we've seen in terms of just pure drama in a while around here. It was definitely a lot of fun. Of course, winning it made it a whole lot more fun. So just, we'll start with some general impressions. That was, and I was thinking after the game, that was a very SEC versus Big Ten game. You know, if you think about it, we relied heavily on the big play, more so than I can remember in a while. And while Michigan in Big Ten fashion controlled the ball, controlled the clock with their run game and this short passing game that they had. And it was an odd game when you look at it statistically. Just to run down a few of these, first downs were 24-17 in favor of Michigan. Plays were 85-56 in favor of Michigan. Time of possession was right at 38 minutes to 22 in favor of Michigan. But here's the thing: total yards, South Carolina 426 to 355. which was 7.6 yards per play for South Carolina and 4.2 for Michigan, which just kind of illustrates the point I was making, just big plays all over the place for South Carolina. Had the edge in the passing game, 341 to 214. And then rushing, Michigan had the edge, 141 to 85. And of those 85 yards, Connor Shaw had 96, which doesn't really seem like it makes a lot of sense. But Dylan Thompson lost a few yards. And Kenny Miles, did anybody else have a carry besides Kenny Miles out of the backfield?
Don't think so.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think it was you saw Davis and you saw Carson get a couple of passes over the middle, but I don't think they ran.
Yeah,
I think Miles had a grand total of 1 yard rushing.
Yeah, the Carson thing was interesting. I guess he was bound and determined that he was not interested in coming back for a sixth year, because he was probably in on 5 or 6 total plays, and they threw back-to-back passes to him, didn't they? I think he had 2 catches for a yard or something like that. But T-Bone, what did you think of the game?
It was an odd game in the sense that, you know, we went in, we led at the end of the first quarter comfortably, 14-3. We led at the half, and Michigan finally took over, I think, on the final play of the third quarter. So for basically 3 quarters of football, we led, but we're very frustrated. I mean, you could see it on the player's face. You could see it on the coach's face. You could see it on my children's face.
Right.
Everybody was very unhappy, even though we were ahead, because it just felt like, and I hate to even start the podcast off with using these letters, but it felt like an LSU game.
Yeah.
You know, it felt like they're going to grind us to death at the end of this game.
Right.
Now, LSU doesn't do that anymore, but that's another conversation.
Right.
very frustrating game. Very frustrating 3 quarters, followed by the most fun I think I've ever had with my clothes on.
G-Man, how about you?
You know, I had a lot of similar sentiments to what, you know, T-Bone just so eloquently you know, set forth there, especially the last part there. But, you know, the game didn't have a lot of flow to it, you know, from our standpoint. I mean, you know, again, you're right. You know, Michigan, they, you know, held the ball, controlled the ball, did a lot of what you'd expect a team like Michigan to do. And we, on the other hand, you know, it was just kind of crazy. I mean, we just kept coming up with these big plays. You know, you remember the series when Dylan came in the game. You know, I think that series started out with those 2 1-yard completions to Sean Carson, and then, you know, a 70-yard seam route to whoever was running number 5 yesterday.
Nick Jones.
I think it was Nick Jones.
Nick
on the
Jones.
Seam route.
Yeah.
You know, it was just kind of like that. You know, a couple of ugly plays followed by some ridiculously successful play. I mean, we had the seam route to Justice that resulted in nothing. We had the long 68-yard run by Connor Shaw, which resulted in nothing. But you just had, you know, big play after big play followed by, you know, negative yards on a rush, or, you know, 1 yard on a rush, or an incomplete pass. You know, the defense held in there. You know, they didn't give up big plays, which was, I think, a big key. You know, we made them earn their points. And you know, they really had to you know, march up and down the field on us in 6, 7, 10-yard increments, and the defense hung in there. I was afraid they were going to wear down, but in the second half we did a little better with the offense, and were able to you know, make just enough big plays to win the ball game. I mean, I agree, it was one of the more exciting games I think I've ever seen from the Gamecocks, and I mean, that's saying a lot because I've seen a lot of them, but that was quite an exciting game. And, you know, of course, we're not mentioning the play yet. I guess we'll save a little bit on that for later. But
yeah.
You know, obviously one of the more exciting moments in Gamecock history in the fourth quarter with about 8 minutes to go.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, there were just so many moments you could take from this game. You know, the early touchdown from Shaw to Bird. The long ball that you mentioned to Jones, the Ace Sanders punt return was just great. Loved watching that. Second half, Shaw on his bad foot rips off that 60-plus yard run, which unfortunately resulted in 0 points, but it was still an exciting play. So let's pick it up after Michigan has a long drive. Seemed like it took about 3 hours to score a touchdown. They go up 22-21. And we came back with a pretty nice drive. It was actually the first time we actually looked like we had some flow to the offense, but the drive stalled and then had a field goal blocked after we had missed a 33-yarder earlier in the game. And then the ensuing drive by Michigan just set up the worst call in the history of refereeing. I mean, I still can't believe the sequence of events. That they run a fake punt, and you know, watching it live, we looked like we should have stopped the guy about 5 yards short in the first place. And he kind of muscles his way, and then when he fell down, I thought they'll review that. There's no way he even came close, but he obviously did after looking at the replay. And then there's at least an inch or two between the end of the measuring stick and the pylon and the ball. And Spurrier's reaction and the team's reaction when the guy points to first down for Michigan was just absolutely priceless. Somehow, some way, and I guess at some point common sense you would think would have to take over in that situation, right? Somebody would say, hang on a minute. I guess that's not a reviewable play, or they can't bring the chains back out. The referee had made his decision. So Michigan gets the ball, a 1st and 10. And then the play that just shook the sports world the last 24 hours, Jadeveon Clowney takes advantage of a miscommunication on the Michigan offensive line and just destroys a guy who he has now made famous, one Vincent Smith. Nobody knew Vincent Smith's name outside of Michigan and maybe a few other folks in the Big Ten, but Jadeveon Clowney has made Vincent Smith famous today, has he not, G-Man?
Oh, absolutely. Vincent Smith, I mean, there's people out there that are saying, you know, Vincent Smith, we wouldn't really be upset with you if you just gave up the game. You know, right. It'd be just fine if you just wanted to quit after this. That whole sequence of events there, as you described, I mean, just an incredible. You know, when the non-first down was called. Yeah, I had this feeling that I've had historically in my fandom of the Gamecock. I mean, wasn't that the most Gamecock thing to happen? I mean,
right.
back in the day when things just seemed to go wrong for us that you had never seen before in a football game.
Right.
I mean, we used to always have these moments where something would happen. You're like, I've never seen that before. Yeah. But we managed to pull that off. We managed to do this. You know?
It's not like
I had a feeling it flashed me back to those days when we would find a way to lose a game on some incredible, crazy play or call. And I just thought, you know, here it is again. You know, that's the first time I've ever seen a first down that's short result in a first down.
Yeah.
But
it's like it wasn't even a judgment call or anything like that. It was like you're looking at the sky and you say the sky is blue and the referee says, no, it's not. First down Michigan, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But then, you know, the Clowney play, just give me a second on that. Because,
yeah.
I mean, I don't really know if I can put it into words, but you know, the word missile comes to mind. I don't think I've ever seen an athlete move that quickly with such force and cause such a disruption in such a short period of time. And the helmet, you know, I mean, we've all heard the joke, you know, I found a Michigan helmet in my front yard.
Right.
Everybody's seen that today. But I mean, incredible the propulsion on this helmet. I think somebody figured out that it ended up 11 yards beyond the hit.
Right.
I mean, it's just one of the most freakish, ridiculous football plays that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I mean, speechless, stunned.
I read a lot at lunch today Every day should be Saturday. Spencer Hall had a great write-up. The guys over at Garnet and Black Attack had a nice write-up on it. I got home today, and they featured it on Around the Horn. Then they featured it on Pardon the Interruption. And everybody's talking about Jadeveon Clowney. And one of the unfortunate aspects is one of the guys on Around the Horn said, you know what, Jadeveon Clowney needs to challenge this rule that the NFL has, or that he has to stay for another year. He needs to challenge. And I'm like, no, hold on. The hit wasn't that great. Calm down. Fair and square. We want him for one more year.
Before people get out of hand, and feel free to pass this on to ESPN and to the draft analysts, is he takes plays off.
Oh, absolutely.
Probably not in the greatest shape.
Right.
You know, doesn't have intensity for the entire game.
Yeah.
So he may need another year to season and percolate.
Yeah. So
I mean, maybe two, actually. I mean, I can.
Yeah. Yeah. So T-Bone at the, you know, that play results in a turnover. So you know what Spurrier loves to do when he gets a turnover in plus territory?
Go deep.
That's right. T-Bone, I was setting you up for the next play.
I'm still struggling because y'all have inadvertently stolen my thunder for rubber chickens.
For the awards. All right. Well, we'll.
So I'm still struggling a little bit, but you know that is the quintessential Spurrier play call right there. Big change, big momentum shift over the 50-yard line. It's gonna be deep. I mean, that we do that every time. I don't know why anyone's shocked by that.
Right.
And I was sitting there, you know, screaming it at the TV when he threw it, and doggone if he didn't complete it. That was awesome. That was awesome. And it was the biggest emotional shift. That's one aspect you haven't really covered. We were standing in my family room, me and my two sons, and one of my sons looks at me as they've come back from commercial. They come back from commercial and they still haven't overturned the call, you know. And he looks at me and he says, "I'm not going to follow football anymore if this is the way that it is."
He was throwing in the towel.
Walking up the steps, and all of a sudden, our house shook.
Yeah.
And we live, you know, miles from the Outback Bowl,
right?
But we all turned and saw the leftovers from the hit. I didn't actually see the hit live. I saw I saw him standing back up with the ball.
Yeah.
And we went crazy. Just the emotional shift. And you know, if it was that way for us in our little mill house in the middle of nowhere, Clemson, then you know, those players, the emotional swing they had to go through.
Well, it was funny. The sideline reporter, who was kind of cute yesterday. Who was that? I didn't catch her name. But anyway, she
liked how she had her hair. She had it pulled back in that little thing right in the front.
Right.
It was adorable.
Yeah. Well,
all right, back on subject.
So she did the sideline report that said half of the Gamecock players were just going ballistic, jumping up and down, and the other half were just standing there with their mouths wide open, not believing what they had just seen. And I was standing up in my living room when that play happened. I think I was getting ready to walk in the kitchen and grab something to drink. And I was one of the guys who just stood there with my mouth open. I couldn't say anything. I was just like, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And, you know, some of the stuff that I read today, there are actually people who are saying that those kind of hits happen in football every week. And, you know, not a big deal if the guy's helmet hadn't come off. Look, people get hit and their helmets come off. We might see that every week, but you don't see somebody's helmet go 6 feet in the air and 11 yards in the opposite direction. Okay.
Yeah, and the other thing there is that the force is equal. I mean, if you hit a hammer against a rock, the force is the force. Both entities are going to feel the force. But Clowney to have delivered a hit that would knock the helmet that far, there's no moment of shaking his head or standing up or thinking, what just happened? No, without even a moment's pause, he's reaching out for the ball and trying to run.
Right.
He grabs it off the ground like a Nerf ball. Okay.
Yeah.
He grabbed it. He palmed it like it was a little Nerf ball, Nerf basketball or something like that.
And the true measure, I think, of how freakish it was is that right after that, LeBron James takes to Twitter and says, that boy a freak.
Right. He did. Yeah. Yeah. So Jadeveon Clowney was trending, and I tweeted earlier today, you just cannot pay for the publicity that we've gotten off of that one play. The Clowney play, and then the play that won the game for us. I mean, it was just completely overshadowed what happened in Atlanta on New Year's Eve. But we'll get to that in a minute too. So the funny thing is to Michigan's credit, after that huge swing in momentum, they get the ball and they drive it down and score a touchdown to take the lead. And before we get off the Clowney thing, Clowney did it again down there on about the 12 or 15 yard line when he hit Denard Robinson.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, he did it. I mean,
you're right. It was a big
that
hit,
was a
scored
huge
a couple
shot.
Plays later.
Yeah, he just, but he.
It's because Clowney wasn't wearing number 3 and in the
or,
in
number
the
15
DB's area.
He wasn't playing Jimmy LeGree's position on that play.
Yeah, you're right. It was 15. Yeah. Although they game planned away from 27 and towards 3
yeah.
all day long. Yeah. All day long.
Yeah, well, and 27 had a heck of a game. But so anyway, that their touchdown sets up the final drive of the game. And that was, you know, between Connor Shaw and Dylan Thompson was about as heroic a performance of two quarterbacks as you're ever going to see on one series. Shaw comes out there and avoids two sure sacks, you know, one of them that basically knocks him out of the game, converts a 4th-and-3 to Sanders. And then when he gets hurt, Dylan Thompson comes in. I think he completes a pass, has a run for a few yards, and then hits the deep ball to Ellington, and the Gamecock Nation just exploded and went crazy. But I remember thinking when Todd Ellis played, when Steve Tannehill played, you know, we'd watch football, and every week some quarterback was leading a game-winning drive. And we were like, just once, we would love for a Gamecock quarterback to lead a game-winning drive.
What, do you remember how they recruited Todd Ellis?
Yeah, they brought him up in the booth, and they recorded a faux Nebraska game.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Bob Fulton did the call of us leading, you know, and granted, it wasn't the Orange Bowl for the national championship, but man –
yeah,
you're right. That was the stuff dreams are made out of. Yeah. And the thing that really made it even more dramatic and more special, whoever the producer was of the Outback Bowl, was keeping that camera on Shaw that whole final drive.
Right.
And you could just see the anguish in his face that he needed to be in there.
Yeah.
And then the minute the touchdown is scored, the camera goes back on Shaw, and he's obviously looking for Dylan to celebrate. He doesn't realize that Dylan's on his back.
Right.
But, guys, think about this for a second, though. I mean, that drive, the one word I could use to describe that drive, it was epic, okay? But how many game-winning last-minute drives have you seen where you have two quarterbacks participate equally
right.
in the success of the drive?
And one that comes to mind is not a good comparison, and that's because it wasn't really a last minute. We remember the fade –
right
in Gamecock lore, but there was still 6 minutes left in that game or something.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. You and I were sitting together watching that. But this was, you know, it's like Connor took us halfway, and then Dylan took us the rest of the way. You know, and people may not know this, but the play that the play where Connor gets hurt, where he avoids the sacks, gets spun out and stays on his feet, he completes the ball to Sanders, he gets hit, re-injures the knee he hurt on the touchdown pass, and he's out. So he's out for the remaining – I think the next play after that was a screen pass to Bird.
Right.
A tunnel screen to Bird, and he goes down and picks up a few yards to around the 32. But, you know, Ace is off the field. Connor's off the field. Lattimore's off the field. I mean, you know, it's just getting ridiculous.
Everybody's off the field. You know?
And we win anyway.
Right.
You know, there's that term, win anyway. But I mean, it was epic. I mean, I mean, it's almost like something you would script in a movie. You know, your starting quarterback hobbles off and your second teamer comes on. I mean, it's hokey almost to think about
it. That's the right word. It's hokey. if you wrote it in a book, people would throw the book and go out and go for a walk. They wouldn't read it. It would be that hokey. But
right. Well, and the Clowney hit, in addition to that, that's something that they put in a movie. And you'd see that in a movie, and you'd be like, yeah, right, that would never happen in a real game.
Yeah, guys, what's the movie?
You know what I read today? I said that somebody said that was the best hit I've seen since Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
That was
who messed with his car?
Right, that was Spencer Hall wrote that. Was very funny. Or maybe it was a guy for Grantland. I remember reading that too. But yeah, that's pretty funny. So anyway, a great win. I'm sure you guys can tell we're still pretty amped up about the win yesterday. It was certainly a lot of fun, a lot of a great way to head into the off season. So why don't you guys ready to do some rubber chicken awards?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, I'm going to go first, and I'm going to go with the two guys we were just talking about. My rubber chicken awards is going to go. My rubber chicken awards are going to go to Connor Shaw and Dylan Thompson. And first, let me say that. I was wrong about Dylan Thompson. I said that he would never be a successful quarterback.
Can you say that again?
Oh, I was absolutely wrong. I will absolutely admit to you that I did not think Dylan Thompson would be anything more than a second or third string quarterback at South Carolina. And now, you know, according to Spurrier, he's going to be given a shot to compete with Shaw for the number one job, led us to the victory over Clemson, came in yesterday, and in the words of Andy Demetra, was just cold-blooded. very happy with the play of Dylan Thompson. I'm not convinced that he's the guy that should be number one, and that takes me to Connor Shaw. To all the people still criticizing Connor Shaw, just shut up. My God. Gosh, look at the guy has been playing on a broken foot for most of the year. And let me tell you what, Steve Spurrier knows something about quarterbacks. And Connor Shaw played the vast majority of the snaps yesterday on a bum wheel. So Steve Spurrier knows what he's doing by keeping Connor Shaw out there. And every time we needed to make a play, that guy made a play. Like I said, avoiding those two sacks. And the second one was just a miracle. How he got out of that was just amazing. So look, Connor Shaw is a warrior. We've said that before. That term is way overused, but that cat is a football player. And I tell you what, if you don't like Connor Shaw, just stop pulling for the Gamecocks, because that guy is a Gamecock through and through. And so is Dylan Thompson. Love both of those guys. They get my rubber chicken awards. Let's go to G-Man.
Great work on the quarterbacks. I mean, if you hadn't taken those guys, I might have taken them for my rubber chicken. Just a great combination we have there. But I'm going to go with Mr. Excitement, the guy who put all the touchdowns on the board for us, Ace Sanders. There was a lot of moaning and groaning at the beginning of the year about the loss of Alshon Jeffrey. You know, who's going to be the go-to receiver? What's going to happen with the receiving core? You know, we're not going to have this big 6'4 jump ball guy. I think with Ace and Bruce, you know, those questions have been answered. But yesterday, Ace Sanders just essentially took over the game on offense and special teams. I mean, when you needed a play to convert a fourth down or to, you know, get us pumped up or to do whatever, I mean, Ace was there. And you know, I don't think he dropped a ball. I think he caught everything that was in the vicinity. And the punt return, I mean, for him was almost ho-hum. You know, he didn't have to make some ridiculously spectacular move to take that punt back. I mean, when the punt was kicked and you could tell that the guy had outkicked his coverage a little bit, I think we all started thinking, you know, that he's got a shot. Because if you give him about 10 yards of momentum before he gets to the first line of defense, I mean, you've got a good shot for him to take it back. And I mean, he made it look easy on that punt return. I was just looking for flags at that point.
Right.
So that was a tremendous play. Of course, the touchdown catch after the Clowney blow-up hit was another tremendous play where he gets the foot down. The fourth and three catch, which was a kind of a diving grab, you know, which saved the game. the other play where he gets hurt on the drive. I mean, and you know, there's more. There's other plays he made as well. I mean, the guy was just spectacular. And I sure hope we haven't seen the last of him in a Gamecock uniform. Of course, the rumors are out there that he's strongly considering the NFL. And, of course, his stock is very high at the moment. And you can see him as a situational slot receiver, punt returner type in the NFL. And, you know, I certainly hope he has a long career in the NFL. But I want him back. I selfishly want him back. And I want him to catch about 65 balls next year and run 5 punts back and be an All-American. Which I think he can be, but yesterday, that cat was just awesome, and was a huge part of the victory.
Yep, the MVP of the Outback Bowl, Ace Sanders. All right, T-Bone, who are you going to take that's not named Jadeveon Clowney?
The award to the two quarterbacks.
Yeah,
G-Man's given his award to the. To the media voted MVP and Ace Sanders for scoring 3 touchdowns. So there's really only one person left to name. And that person is Vincent Smith, running back of the University of Michigan. A few things you might not know about Vincent Smith. Vincent Smith grew up in Pahokee, Florida. He played high school ball at Pahokee High School. Was a Super Prep All-American. Somehow or another passed over by all the big schools. But now he joins the elite land of people like Al Downing and Chris Weber. And we could probably think of more examples. People whose name will be forever associated with an incredible misadventure. And so I think we need to recognize that. One more thing you may not know about Mr. Smith, in addition to having a projectile helmet and a projectile football, is he is the only player in football history at Michigan to score rushing, passing, and receiving touchdowns in a single game.
Is he really?
Yeah, he did that last year against Minnesota. So see, this is... that's something.
If Clowney had not obliterated him yesterday, you'd have never known that about Vincent.
No, it would never come out. So Clowney, in addition to the other things he's done, he's passed that knowledge on to us.
Right.
I will go a step further and give not really a rubber chicken award, but maybe what I'll call a Team Coco award to Jeff McConaughey, the optometrist / insurance salesman from somewhere in upstate Illinois, who was the Outback Bowl referee that blew that call. But we can't go without mentioning him at least. I'm so glad, so very glad that we can laugh about that thing now, because I'm telling you, that was a low moment there for about 90 seconds.
I wasn't even mad. I mean, it was one of those things where... this calm just came over me. You know, when I realized they weren't going to overturn that call, or they weren't going to give the ball, I don't know if it was some aura or something that just came over me. I was like, okay, well, you know, that's the breaks. But I kind of resigned myself to losing the game at that point too. It's like, you can't overcome something like that. You can't. And, by God, we did on the very next play. So, some other notable guys, we talked about Vic Hampton, had a pretty doggone good game yesterday. Nick Jones played well and has really stepped up here in the last few games of the season, and he's definitely going to be in the receiver rotation next year. Devin Taylor was all over the place yesterday.
I want to say one thing about Devin Taylor too.
Yeah.
You know, he's obviously been overshadowed by Clowney this year, and I think I started tooting his horn on another podcast, because I feel like the guy has gotten a kind of the short end of the stick this year, because he's in on. I mean, it's almost like he gets in there and starts it, and Clowney finishes it on a lot of these plays. If you watch some of those sacks from the Clemson game, But it really kind of ticked me off when they're talking to Spurrier at the press conference, and he said he went up and thanked Clowney for tipping the ball away from Gardner on the final Hail Mary play.
Right.
Glad he did that so that the ball didn't get a chance to be caught. Well, it wasn't Clowney.
Right. That's
it
right.
It was Taylor. Everybody just assumes it was Clowney, okay? But anyways, I get off my soapbox, but I want to give a little shout-out to Devin.
Yeah, Devin Taylor. Devontae Holloman came out yesterday just like a house of fire.
You know, and there's an injustice right there. I'm looking at the time on this call. We're at minute 38, yeah. And that's the first time we've mentioned Devontae Holloman. That guy we're gonna know how good he was next year when we don't have him.
Yep. 4-year starter.
Yeah, yeah. So let's go ahead and jump into next season and start talking about what the expectations are going to be like. And you know, we're one day removed from the 2012-2013 season. Let's go ahead and start talking about 2013-2014. Hopefully we'll play into 2014 next year. We're losing, you know, I look at what we're losing on defense and it scares me a little bit. You know, we lose Devin Taylor and Aldrick Fordham from the defense. Aldrick Fordham was really an unsung guy. He had a sack yesterday. Always a solid contributor on the defensive line. We lose our top five linebackers. Is that right?
Yep.
And we lose DJ Swearinger. Who else we lose off of that defense?
Jared Auguste.
So, you know, we got some people to replace next year, no doubt about it. But one thing I do feel good about, I don't know if you noticed, how many defensive linemen do we rotate in? I mean, we have got a stable of defensive linemen. And while we lose Taylor and Fordham, you know, next year we're redshirting Darius English. We got the Dixon brothers. We got Phillip Dukes.
JT Surratt.
He did.
Deion Green's out there. There's a lot of linemen. I mean, the front line is going to be the strength of the defense.
Yeah.
Has anybody said Chaz Sutton yet?
No,
Chaz
Sutton, he had a great
step in at the other D end.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have those guys really play big because the linebackers are going to be very, very young and it's going to be not a lot of depth, you know, in linebacker. That's going to be the trouble spot. Everybody knows it, everybody's worried about it. Sort of the elephant in the room. Coaches don't really want to talk about it, but you know, we have a problem at linebacker, and we're trying to address it in recruiting. But bottom line is, there's going to be no experience, none.
I saw for the first time this week the talk of moving Kelvin Rainey over to linebacker, which made me kind of happy.
They got to do something. I mean, yeah. The guy that we were all counting on to, you know, kind of take the next step. Was Cooper, and now he's, you know, kind of unknown his status for the fall. So,
right,
they got to do something.
So on the other side of the ball, we lose. You know, nobody's really talking about losing T.J. Johnson, but that guy, he's been the anchor of that offensive line for a number of years now.
I don't know. It's fair to call him an anchor. I love T.J. Johnson, but he's kind of more like a drift net.
There's T-Bone being T-Bone.
Yeah. I'm not sure how to take that. I don't know if you're criticizing him or complimenting him.
No, I mean, he's played for 4 years. He started for 4 years. I think he holds the record.
Yeah.
And so I'm not criticizing. He's a good, solid player. But I'm curious. Yeah. I'm very curious to see what else we can do at that position going forward.
So we lose Justice Cunningham at tight end. Obviously, Marcus isn't coming back. And as G-Man alluded to, maybe we lose Ace Sanders. Hope he does come back. But – you know, I'll be excited to see the expanded roles for two guys I talked about in the preseason, Shaq Rowland and Jarrell Adams. They both had balls thrown their way yesterday. I feel bad for Shaq Rowland. I feel like he just wasted a year this year, and hopefully all of this potential that he has will come to the forefront next season, and he'll become a number one or number two guy in the wide receiver rotation.
Hey, you forgot – we're losing your number one guy too.
Oh, D.L. Moore?
Yeah.
Well, we had already lost him.
I just want to make sure you got to mention him one more time.
Yeah, you mentioned the 6'4 jump ball guy earlier, and I thought, where was D.L. Moore yesterday? Oh yeah, right. He got kicked off the team. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm gonna miss D.L. I'm gonna miss him. I'm not sure when or where I'm gonna miss him, but I'm sure at some point we'll remember D.L. Moore down the road. So, you know, we have got to be one of the favorites in the East next year. I think anything short of a trip to Atlanta will probably be a little disappointing with what we've got coming back. You know, one of the big things that will shape the race in the East next year is whether Aaron Murray comes back or not, I think. If Aaron Murray comes back, Georgia's going to be formidable. If they don't, They'll have a lot of question marks. I think they're possibly losing 9 out of 11 on defense. Florida, I think, is beatable. We'll have them at home next year. Anybody Florida got the
must,
Florida?
Florida must be beatable. They're losing 17-3 right now to Louisville.
Good gracious, that's surprising. So anyway, G-Man, what do you think of our chances next year?
Well, I think one thing you haven't mentioned that is absolutely key is the schedule. I think we're gonna be pretty good. I think next year is gonna be a year where the offense is gonna have to take the lead, because we're gonna have a lot of guys back on offense, including both our top quarterbacks, and we've proven that we can move the football without Marcus as much as we don't want to be there. That's where we are, and you know, we are unconventional sometimes in the run game. But, you know, we can move the football. We're going to move the ball. We're going to score points because we're essentially going to have the same offense next year than we have now, assuming Ace comes back. But you're going to have the offense carry the defense for a while. But the schedule, just look at Georgia this year. I mean, you know, they didn't have to play LSU. Next year they have to play LSU. Now, granted, we don't know how good LSU is anymore, but I think the schedule sets up well for us, and we have to take advantage of that while we have the opportunity and while we have the momentum that we have now, with Spurrier, with Clowney. I mean, having Clowney back is for one more year, assuming he doesn't petition the NFL and, you know, sue the NFL and all that jazz. You got to take advantage while you have that guy on your team. The best player in college football. I mean, hands down, the best player in college football. We all know it. Everybody knows it. He may not win the Heisman, but he's the best player in college football. So you've got to take advantage of the schedule, and it sets up nicely for us. And we're going to have to go in there and beat everybody we're supposed to beat. And hope we don't slip up, and hope that Georgia loses to LSU, hope they lose to Florida, and, you know, get that monkey off our back with Georgia beating us because of their schedule.
Right. T-Bone, any additional thoughts?
Well, it's a tough thing to look at because, you know, we've won 22 games in the last 2 years, mm-hmm. You know. And if you told me that next year we were going to win 10 and play in the Outback Bowl, you'd be kind of, you know, that'd be great. But
that would not be great.
We are very, very quickly spoiled as a fan base, I think. I do think G-Man is exactly right with the schedule setting up nicely for us. So if we can have as good of a team as we had this year, then the schedule's more favorable. Maybe that makes the difference. I think our games are going to feel a lot different next year, and y'all have kind of alluded to this, where we may have scored enough points to win and then relied on our defense. I think you may see a lot more 31-28 kind of games next year. I think it's reasonable to assume, giving everything that we're going to lose on defense, that we'll give up, you know, probably on average about a touchdown more a game. So this offseason's important, and it's important particularly, I'd like to see us really develop a strong running back personality, good rotation there, which I don't really see us having right now. I'd also like to see the interior of our offensive line get stronger. And, you know, then obviously we've already mentioned the linebacking issues, which I hope they've got, you know, a magic solution to.
Yeah. Well, I think the running back depth should be good next year with Davis. I think Davis will probably come in as the number one guy. The coaches obviously just fell in love with Sean Carson all over again during Outback Bowl practice, for him to get out there and play. And then Brandon Wilds, Kendrick Sally. So there's definitely going to be some opportunity for some talented guys to make a move at the running back position. So, well, we'll have a lot more discussions about next year. But, you know, we were having this conversation before we started recording here about this being, and I tweeted about this yesterday, this is kind of the golden age of Gamecock sports. With that finish yesterday, with the Clowney hit that is just the talk of the sports world today, I mean, there have been more moments in the last 3 years than in the previous 20 or 30 combined. You know, whatever you want to call them, iconic moments, memorable moments, memorable plays. What do you guys, agree with that? I mean, I was trying to think of just memorable Gamecock moments prior to, let's say, the College World Series 3 years ago. You know, there's the 92, I think it was the 92 game where Brandon Bennett beats UGA. There's less than 10 seconds to go in that game. That's the last time I can remember us winning a game that late. But we turned around the following week and we lost to Arkansas. So we didn't do anything with that. You know, the second Outback Bowl victory over Ohio State years ago was on a last-second field goal. That was exciting. You know, I came up with Mike Rath to Troy Williamson against Kentucky during the Holtz era. The Josh Brown field goal against Tennessee in Spurrier's first year. And those are all just football memories. You know, there's obviously the win over number one Kentucky in basketball, but that's been within the last 3 years. So can you guys think of anything else stand out besides the silence that I'm listening to now?
Yeah, I don't know. I think G-Man was making a salad or something over there while you were rattling those off. But, you know, there's truth to what you say. Things are better now across our entire athletic program, really, I guess, than they've ever been. I mean, basketball's still a potential. It's a work in progress. But with what baseball's doing and what football's doing and what women's basketball's doing, you know, there's a lot of good things going on with Gamecock sports. But I would kind of take the contrary position. When you say that this is the golden age, that assumes that it's going to, you know, change for the worse dramatically. And while I don't think we're going to win 11 games for every year from here on out, I do think, in a way, we're just now arriving where we should be in the SEC. I mean, we should be competing with Tennessee and Florida every year and Georgia, and now we are. And so there'll be ups and downs, but I think this is where we belong in the college football world, given the amount of money we've got, the high-profile conference that we're in. I think we can expect good things going forward. And you know, I'm not even a member of the Columbia Chamber of Commerce or anything.
Yeah, well, and when I say this is the golden age, you know, a golden age could last a long time. But, you know, relatively speaking, compared to our, you know, what's gone on in our previous history, this is definitely the golden age of Gamecock sports, and hopefully it'll last many, many more years. And do you got any moments prior to the last 3 years, G-Man, that you can think of that really stand out to you?
Moments, you mean in Gamecock football history that I've witnessed?
Gamecock sports history.
You really go back a ways, you know, for the really significant moments. I mean, you know, the George Rogers, you know, season when he wins the Heisman Trophy. And you know, another Michigan victory when they beat Michigan in Ann Arbor. I mean, at the time, that was one of the biggest victories ever in the history of the school. And things like that, the 84 season, which was by far the best season they'd ever had. You know, you got to go back to those moments to where you can even start comparing it to some of the things we pulled off in recent years.
Yeah, and let me interject right there, G-Man, because that's one important measuring stick I don't want us to miss before you get back on your point.
Yep.
When we beat Michigan in Ann Arbor, what was that, 84?
No, 80.
80. We lost to them in 84 or 85.
85.
Like
85.
Yeah. When we beat them in 1980, it was not like when App State beat them, but it was more like when App State beat them than when we beat them yesterday.
Oh, absolutely.
We haven't even mentioned the fact that, oh, the storied Michigan football that hasn't come up, and we're now at minute 52 of the call. So,
right.
You know, that's a measuring stick as much as anything. We all three knucklehead bloggers feel like, yeah, we belong on the field with them. We beat them. Yeah.
Well, it's been an evolution. You know, we've talked about this before, but it's been an evolution, and you could thank our entry into the SEC for it. I mean, we've talked about this before, how we took our lumps early on in the SEC and endured some absolute poundings by Alabama and other schools along the way. But we have seen the gradual building of the program through our time in the SEC and the money and the the emphasis and all the things that the other schools put out there that we had to do. We were going to have to put forth the commitment, or we were going to continue to get destroyed. And you know, our administration has elected to put the money and the effort and the emphasis on athletics, and obviously it's paid off in baseball. It's paying off in football, and you know, we now belong. I think most of the schools in the country, you know, in the top 25 would, you know, they wouldn't look at us and go, wow, those guys don't belong in the top 20. I mean, we've been in the top 25 or top 20 for how many consecutive weeks now in football? I mean, it's just, we belong. And that's just sort of a strange thing to say about Gamecock football, but it's turned out to be true. And I agree with what Buck was saying. It doesn't necessarily have to be an era that that ends quickly, but he's right. This certainly is the golden age. There's nothing you could even compare it to.
So, and we talked a little. I thought about this yesterday. I keep referring to the last 3 years, and this is really all sports. Can you think of the moment when it started? I thought of a moment, maybe that you may not think of. When did this whole thing start? The run of the last 3 years for Gamecock sports.
Alabama football game, maybe, or the national championship run in baseball with the first year. I don't know.
What I thought of?
You could make an argument that it happened the minute the Auburn hat came off the South Carolina hat in Marcus Lattimore's announcement.
Yeah. I tell you what came to mind for me was a blistering hot Sunday afternoon in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, when Christian Walker hit that 3-run homer against Coastal Carolina to send us to Omaha for the first time since how long it had been, 2003. That was a huge play. I mean, that, because we were, if you remember, Coastal was a great team that year. And we go to Myrtle Beach, we eked out a win on Saturday, and I just remember thinking, this cannot go to Monday. We cannot go to a game 3 with these guys. And we were down by a couple of runs, and Christian Walker hits that bomb. Matt Price comes in and closes it out and sends us to Omaha, and we win the College World Series. I thought of that moment. I'm like, that might have been the biggest home run in South Carolina baseball history, because that just launched us to consecutive College World Series victories, a runner-up last year. But it also kind of signaled the beginning of this run in football, too. Remember, heading into 2010, we kept referring to the baseball team because they had just won their first national title. And we were like, hey, man, if the baseball team can do it. And the football team was playing off the baseball team. And so that kind of came to mind for me. Anyway.
No, I think that's a good observation. I remember that swing very well. I mean, that was, you know, just one of those moments that you'll never forget as a Gamecock fan, especially a Gamecock baseball fan. But I mean, that ball was crushed.
Yeah.
And that sort of we rode the wave.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about the enemy for a moment in a segment that we like to call
This week in Dabo.
So our buddy Dabo had been really quiet for the last month or so.
He's been saving it up.
Since we beat them for the fourth consecutive year. And, you know, you can always count on Dabo for a soundbite or two every couple of weeks. And he was quiet after the South Carolina loss. He was pretty mild leading up to the Chick-fil-A bowl game. And then he hit us with the Dabo post-game interview that was so incredibly Dabo. Let's just take a listen to a portion of this.
You're emotional right now. What are you most emotional about?
Just to see these seniors finish the way they did, to see our team not quit. This is a national championship team. We grew up tonight. I've been telling them they're at the doorway of the greatness, but sooner or later you got to step through it. You got to take action. Tonight, man, they just hung in there and they grew up. We had injuries. You know, we're playing with a freshman tackle that hadn't really played all year. Sammy Watkins goes out. We turn the ball over, and they just keep playing. Fourth and 16. My freaking quarterback mans up and makes plays. Just awesome.
All right, T-Bone. So you're in the Upstate. You're our you're our boots on the ground up there in Clemson territory. The two things that he says in that clip: this is a national championship team, and we're at the doorway to greatness. Now, a lot of people have jumped on him for saying this is a national championship team. Do you think he meant to say this is a national championship caliber team?
No, I don't think he meant to say that.
I'm just curious.
Think he meant to say exactly what he said. And the thing is, and I'm glad that you played the clips, the method of delivery, it was like an altar call.
Yeah.
I swear, if you've been in a Baptist church on a Sunday night, when they don't do the nice altar call, they do more like the mean, the concern troll altar call. He was looking in the camera, and he just had this look in his face like he was speaking from his heart. And I think he was speaking from his heart.
Yeah.
I don't know. Over time, and maybe it's the four straight victories. Maybe it's how much fun the It's Dabo Twitter feed is to mess with. But I've kind of fallen in love with Dabo. and it's his earnest idiocy that really draws me in.
Yeah.
He really believes this stuff. And he operates on about a fifth grade level. And I mean, I think he's as honest as he can be.
Yeah.
And you know, it just shone through. Now, I was watching it live with a whole bunch of Clemson fans who were at a New Year's Eve party that were ecstatic. And even they were kind of rolling their eyes at each other. So even with the win, the chinks are appearing in the fan base over Dabo, but you just gotta love the guy. Gotta love him.
Yeah, well, G-Man admitted to us he hadn't seen or heard the interview. You need to go check it out on YouTube. He actually, I can't remember who the sideline reporter is. He actually picks her up and hugs her before the interview starts, and then he starts yelling into the microphone, and his voice cracks a couple of times. And I think he may have been crying a little bit before the interview started, actually.
He was.
And compare that, you know, T-Bone, what you saw with Dabo's post-game interview to Spurrier's post-game interview, which lasted about 20 seconds and talked about nothing. You know, what is
Yeah, it was because Spurrier wasn't putting on a performance. He's not trying to impress anybody.
Right.
He's trying not to, you know, he's not trying to sell this image of, you know, the great Christian city on the hill led by the humble man of God. Spurrier's just out there like, yeah, we kicked their butts, and he walks off. You know? So it is two very different styles.
Yeah, yeah. Well, guys, you know, very good season. Another 11-2, 22-4 over the last couple of years. And as Connor Shaw said after the game yesterday, we want to get to 12 next year, maybe 13, maybe 14, maybe 14 wins next year. That'd be nice to finish off the season with 14 wins. So
if we get to 14 wins next year, we are going to do this podcast. We're going to do it live, and we're going to do a video version. And we'll all be naked.
You know, that's really not going to be good for anybody. So, listeners, just ignore what T-Bone just said. We might do it.
We'll all be naked except for G-Man.
Let's stop at 13 wins.
I'll be pulling for us to lose in the national championship game just so I don't have to see T-Bone naked.
Yeah.
Again. G-Man, any final thoughts on the season?
I was sitting here thinking back to our preseason podcast when we were making our predictions.
Uh-huh.
And we were all talking about how many games we thought we would win. And I think I came out at 9-3. And I remember thinking, man, I'm really kind of stretching it here. you know, I'm not real sure. I kind of was doing it for the entertainment value. I was having a hard time actually coming to terms with the fact that we are as good as we are, and we're at the caliber of program that could win 11 games in a season, which we had done last year. So, you know, you guys know me and how long I've followed us and how pessimistic I can be about our program and our team. And I just got to say, you know, this is what we have done these last 2 years is absolutely amazing and impressive. And we have reached some, you know, pinnacle that we have never reached before. And, you know, frankly, I never thought we would get here. And now we're talking about even greater things, which is hard for me to even imagine. But it's been an incredible year, you know, very similar to last year. You lose Marcus Lattimore, you know, 2/3 of the way through the season. You continue to go along and you win a New Year's bowl game against a Big Ten team. I mean, this is, you know, strikingly similar to last season, if you think about it, the way this all turned out. But, you know, another great year, and, you know, that's all I can really say.
T-Bone.
Well, I mean, he's covered it. I don't have much more to say. Let me flip it on its head a little bit and talk about the upstart Tigers on my way out the door. If you look over the last 5 years, Clemson is now 5-5 against the SEC over the last 5 years. Check it out, which is impressive till you realize that, you know, Mississippi State plays 500 ball in the SEC too, and they play a lot more of the teams. So don't sweat so much about Clemson now having arrived.
Well, if they're 5-5 and four of their losses are to us.
Exactly. The other one,
they'll take that all day.
Maybe 5-6 because they got a loss to Auburn and a loss to Alabama in that span too. So,
yeah,
you know, the SEC is a week to week league. And so don't let your friends and neighbors get too pumped up about the Tigers. They've got to beat the local team a few times first.
Well, despite all the SEC hate that is out there, it is – still the measuring stick, whether Louisville beats Florida tonight or not. We're gonna cut the podcast off and go watch some football. But before we sign off, we'd like to remind all you Gamecock fans, it has now been 1,496 days since South Carolina lost to Clemson in football. And for you stat lovers, I broke that down a little bit, and these are approximations, so save your emails. But that's 213 weeks, 35,880 hours, 2,152,800 minutes, and 129,168,000 seconds of glorious Clemson beatdown.
I love it.
But then again, who's counting? So... Folks, Happy New Year. I am Buck for the RubberChickensBlog.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at RubberChickens, R-U-B-R Chickens. Tell your friends, tell your family. We will be podcasting again real soon.